Hi, I'm Robert Byrne from the Deutsches Herzzentrum in Munich. We're here at ACC 2014 in Washington, and we've just had some very interesting trial data presented. Today we're going to talk about two studies, HEAT PPCI and BRAVE 4. BRAVE 4 is a study which we had some involvement in Munich, and HEAT PPCI is run from the Liverpool group, and I'm delighted to be joined by Adil Shahzad and Rod Staples from Liverpool. So I think, first of all, let's say a few words about HEAT PPCI. And Adil, I'll ask you, could you give us a little bit of background to the study or the design of the study?
Thank you very much, Robert. In the primary PCI setting, bivalirudin and bailout use of GP2B3 inhibitors is an established treatment option. It has never been tested, the bivalirudin and heparin having the same amount of GP2B3 inhibitor use in the bailout form against each other. HEAT PPCI is the first ever trial comparing bivalirudin and heparin in primary PCI setting with use of GP2B3 inhibitors in bailout conditions in both conditions.
Okay. So the novelty, I think, in this setting is you are restricting GPI use to bailout use. I think an approach which makes sense. I know we discussed earlier, we conducted the BRAVE 3 trial in Munich with STEMI patients, and we hypothesized back then that if you gave people clopidogrel loading 600 milligram, then probably you weren't going to add a whole lot with GPI use. And in that study, we didn't see any benefit against placebo with GPI use. So we tend to be quite restrictive, at least at our center, in GPI, so which reflects the use in your trial.
I agree. I mean, I think selective use is increasingly the international norm and is in fact represented in both the European and American society guidelines. We're in a kind of unique situation with GP2B3 agents in that we can gain useful information at the time of angiography about the patients who have the greatest potential for benefit, and we can balance this against the perceived bleeding risk.
Yeah.
The thrombus burden, the response to simple steps in intervention will guide us as to which patients probably need the GPI agents.
Yeah.
But of course, the exact optimum frequency of use is yet to be decided.
Yeah. So this is STEMI patients. This is an unselected enrollment, I think, or pretty broad inclusion criteria of patients with STEMI. Is that right?
This is a true all-comers trial. And every patient that activated the primary PCI pathway, having STEMI, in the acute phase management was planned to have primary PCI as their index procedure, was enrolled, and if they were eligible, were enrolled in the study.
Yeah.
And we have successfully recruited 100% of all eligible patients,
okay,
creating a real-world population.
Uh-huh.
I think that's, you know, quite a significant achievement.
Absolutely.
If you think about the stresses of primary PCI, patients arriving with minimal notice, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, managed by a wide variety of staff manning an on-call rota, we achieved fantastic cohesion of the colleagues so that not a single eligible patient over 22 months was missed.
Yeah. I mean, that's really a fantastic achievement. So the question then is actually quite a straightforward question. It's in this setting, bivalirudin or heparin. What was the main endpoint of the study, or what did you decide to look at?
Well, we looked at the primary efficacy outcome was a MACE composite of all-cause mortality, CVA, recurrent infarction, and additional unplanned target lesion revascularization.
Okay.
Now,
as
we showed in the presentation today, actually, target lesion revascularization made almost no contribution to the composite. Only a single TLR event occurred in the absence of a more significant event.
Yeah.
So really we're looking at the rates of more substantial events here.
Yeah, so it's hard clinical endpoints, and you've decided to go for an ischemic endpoint rather than a composite endpoint including ischemic and bleeding complications. So the primary endpoint looked at ischemic events.
It is, and we had a primary safety efficacy outcome which looked at major bleeding.
Okay.
I think that obviously this is a subject for debate, but there's a strong body of opinion who believes that there are many methodological problems with combining safety and efficacy outcome measures, not least that it creates a composite which, by design, will contain elements which will move in opposite directions.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this makes it very difficult to
discern. So I think we've learned a lot in recent years, and we've all become more cognizant of the fact that bleeding has probably an equal impact on mortality as ischemic endpoints. But as you allude to, because the effects tend to move in different directions, then there's certainly some argument about not combining them into a composite endpoint.
Yeah.
We stuck to the principle of keeping them separate.
Yeah. Okay. So pre-specified primary efficacy and pre-specified primary safety. So what did you find?
Well, in terms of the primary efficacy outcome, a statistically significant difference did emerge. Mm. And Adil, you know the figures probably better than anyone.
Yeah.
Well, patients that received bivalirudin had significantly higher incidence of MACE composite at 8.7% versus 5.7% in patients that received heparin. Mm-hmm. This difference was mainly driven by the reinfarction events and acute stent thrombosis events.
Okay.
Acute stent thrombosis events were significantly higher, fourfold higher in the bivalirudin group in comparison to the heparin arm. And according to the ARC criteria, they were mainly definite events in the first 24 hours.
Very interesting. So a clear message there in terms of stent thrombosis driving this difference in the ischemic endpoint.
An absolute risk increase of 3% in the bivalirudin arm. And relative risk increase of 1.52.
That's for the whole MACE event.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the MACE event relative risk.
Yeah.
The actual difference in the stent thrombosis, the relative risk is about fourfold, which is actually remarkably similar to the rate seen in Euromax and the rate seen in Horizons, which was actually fivefold.
So it's quite a stark message then. I suppose two questions that spring to mind is, what about GPI use? How much GPIs were used in these patients? And second question is, what about the ADP receptor antagonists? Were they contemporary modern treatments?
The use of GPI was similar in both groups, between 13 to 15%. And in terms of dual antiplatelet loading, it was almost universal, with patients receiving either clopidogrel, prasugrel, or ticagrelor. I could say that 60% of the patients received ticagrelor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so modern therapy, the majority of patients treated with ticagrelor and a relatively low rate of selective GPI use. I suppose the next important question is bleeding. What did you see in terms of bleeding?
Well, in terms of major bleeding, which was predefined as BARC criteria 3 to 5, there was no statistically significant difference, with rates around 3% in both groups. We also looked at minor bleeding, defined as BARC 2, and the combination of major or minor bleeding.
Yeah.
And again, there's no differences.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That's challenging a paradigm that we've come to accept, that bivalirudin tends to be associated with lower bleeding. How do you account for this?
I'd like to challenge that, yeah.
Yeah.
In trials where bivalirudin monotherapy is compared to heparin monotherapy at reasonable heparin doses, no bleeding advantage ever emerges.
Yeah.
If we take ourselves back to the acuity trial, admittedly in the non-STEMI arena, there was a limb of acuity with universal GP2BA and a limb of heparin and universal GP2B3A.
Yeah.
And they also had identical bleeding.
Yeah.
We know from many trials over more than a decade that differential use of GPI results in differential use of bleeding. And hence we feel that the leading trials substantiating bivalirudin use in the primary PCI setting are to some extent perhaps a tiny bit flawed, in that it's difficult to make a reliable comparison of the relative efficacy and safety of the two agents with a background of differential GPI use.
Yeah.
GPI drives bleeding.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And certainly the other study we alluded to at the start was BRAVE 4, which we were involved in coordinating from Munich. And we looked at a similar question. It was bivalirudin against heparin in STEMI patients. The bivalirudin patients were also treated with prasugrel, and the heparin patients were also treated with clopidogrel. But I think the similarity is that in both studies there were low GPI use. So in our study, it was around about 4.5% GPI use, so a low rate of GPI use. And interestingly then, in terms of bleeding, we didn't see any difference either between the two groups, which I think is in keeping with what you saw. The primary endpoint in our study was a composite, including ischemic and bleeding endpoints, and overall, actually, this was also similar in both groups. So I think some consistencies in the message between the two studies and some slightly different findings.
See, I think it's interesting to stress that I don't find these findings you've described from the BRAVE and the HEAT study as in any way surprising.
Yeah.
I think they're in keeping with a body of evidence that's developed in a stepwise manner over a protracted period.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's maybe finish, I suppose, the question on people's lips is going to be the question of stent thrombosis. We now have Horizon's AMI, we have Euromax, and we have your study showing an excess of stent thrombosis with bivalirudin therapy. The guidelines, on the other hand, recommend bivalirudin as the therapy of choice in patients who are undergoing primary PCI. Is it time for a rethink? Do we need to update the guidelines? What do you think are the implications of your study and BRAVE 4 in this respect?
This is interesting because, again, I'm listening to emerging data around the meeting here in Washington, D.C., and there seems to be signals that possibly bivalirudin results can be improved if the infusion is continued at a high-dose regime for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. But I can't really advocate that strategy because even if it was possible with a magic wand to abolish excess bivalirudin-related stent thrombosis in HEAT, you would only then gain equivalence. The strategy you're suggesting would change the drug cost differential from 500-fold to perhaps 1,500-fold mm-hmm. with the cost of ampules for prolonged infusion to achieve a comparable result.
Yeah.
And I think when cost is such an important issue in modern healthcare, society would have to look at this, and the guidelines maybe need some revision.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all in agreement on that one. And thanks for coming here today, and congratulations on an excellent study, and I think one which will have a long-lasting impact.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.